I know there are lots of flaws in the 1964 series. They reflect a time and place where TV viewers watched idealized life from a narrow perspective, that of the people in rural Mayberry, North Carolina. The writers touched on subjects like single working women, Ellie, Helen, and Thelma Lou, maintaining order without violence, think Barney Fife with his only bullet in his pocket. My favorite episode is often missed, the one where Aunt Bee learns to fly solo. She doesn't go too far, just far enough to know she has always been able to do what she dreamed of doing. It may seem strange, but as I looked at the 7th and 8th commandments, I kept thinking about the season 5 episode. Opie brings the wallet to his dad, Sheriff Taylor, and is told he has to wait 7 days to see if anyone claims the wallet. If not, finders keepers, losers weepers. And for the next 22 minutes of the show, we are left rooting that no one will claim the money. We want Obie to keep it, spend it as he wishes, because after all, he is, well, Opie. Time passes. No one shows up. It's his. He buys a new rod and reel, of course, because this is Mayberry and that's what a child would buy. Then you guessed it. As Opie waits for his dad and Barney to show up at the jail to let them see his purchases, the rightful owner comes through the door. What will Opie do? Is it finders keepers? Is this too simple an illustration for commandments spoken by the God of love from the height of Mount Sinai to the people below? Possibly. Yet I wonder if we can't see the dilemma in the smaller things, are we able to see them in the larger picture? When our integrity is on the line, when the consequences of our actions have generational repercussions, will we follow the commandments of God? Will we understand and practice living in such a way where we honor the image of God in all humanity and build relationships so we are able to live in peace with all creation? Did I leap too far from rural North Carolina to the world? Let's back up. In Exodus 20, we read verses 14 and 15. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. Both commandments involve the act of taking what belongs to another. Women were the property of men in this time and culture. For thousands of years, if a man had sex with a woman who was the property of another man, this was adultery. He took what belonged to another man. You shall not steal is very straightforward. Yes, it governed material things and livestock, but more importantly, it also governed kidnapping, stealing an enslaved person from the one who owned them. This commandment is also speaking to how we regard other people made in the image of God. It seems so very strange that these millions of people who had just been freed from Egypt needed a commandment to know these things. They knew what it felt like to be enslaved. So wouldn't they understand the importance of freedom? They had seen the women in their midst used and abused by, well, everyone. Wouldn't they know it was time to set all people free too? Yet God thunders down the mountain, no adultery, no stealing. Do not take what's not yours. They're written on stone tablets carried down in the hands of Moses and now come to us through the ages. For, like the people of old, we must elevate these simple words to God-given commandments for the sake of all humanity. Look with me to an important encounter with Jesus found in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John. It's understood by biblical scholars that these words were added to the Gospel decades later. The story had circulated so greatly that it was determined that to omit it was omitting a vital part of who Jesus was, how Jesus lived, and how we must live as his followers. John 8. Early in the morning, he came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. And, making her stand before all of them, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now, in the law of Moses, commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They said this to test him, so that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And once again, he bent down and wrote on the ground. When they heard it, they went away, one by one, beginning with the elders. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" And she said, "No one, sir." Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go your way, and from now on, do not sin again." What does this story tell us about the people there that day, the scribes and the Pharisees? They knew the law. They had power and authority to seize the woman and take her away. No one comes to her aid. No voice is speaking on her behalf. There is no other partner to the crime of adultery brought forth. These religious leaders were seeking to test Jesus, not to determine if he knew the law as they knew it, but to see how he might break it. They must have heard him before, knew of his miracles, understood he ate with tax collectors and sinners, spent time with those declared unclean by the same law. They were there to arrest him, take him away, end him. What does it tell us about Jesus? He understood their motives and their plan. Of course he knew the law. He had come to fulfill it. He would do so with the way he was born, how he lived, when he would die, and in his resurrection. I've always wondered, what was he writing on the ground that day as he taught? The Ten Commandments would have been appropriate. Jesus did not diminish their importance in this encounter. He grew their meaning. There was so much else being stolen that morning in front of the temple. The leaders were stealing dignity, value, reputation from the woman. They were stealing justice and mercy from the equation. They were taking from those listening to an opportunity to hear the words of Jesus, learn from him, spending time in his presence. Jesus knew the hearts of each person before him that day. Jesus does what Jesus so wonderfully will do. He restores, redeems. With his words, he holds up a mirror until the religious leaders can see themselves. "Let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And one by one, they walk away until only the woman is left. What does this encounter tell us about her? We don't know her name. We don't know her guilt or shame. We don't even know if she had done anything wrong. We often make assumptions about her and how she came to be caught in adultery. Yet the story tells us what we need to know. She met Jesus. He spoke to her, told her she was no longer condemned. She had been set free. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not take what belongs to another person, their value, their worth as a child of God, their reputation, dignity, their trust. In his book, Words of Life, Adam Hamilton quotes another author, Walter Wangerin, who writes about the moment of maybe, the moment when you are contemplating making a decision that might violate your marriage, your own reputation, your integrity, someone else's trust in you. A moment when you begin to consider taking what is not yours. I'm not going to list all the possibilities. You know what this means for you. It's the thing that keeps creeping into your mind that if you did it, would harm yourselves and others. It's the reason we continue to pray earnestly, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Moments of maybe come more often than we might admit, but they're there, giving us a choice. Hamilton offers 5 R's for those times when maybe is moving toward yes. They aren't new thoughts for you or for me. They're simple, yet in those moments of temptation, their importance is clear. 1, remember who you are. Is the action I am tempted by consistent with these roles and characteristics I hope define me? The faithful partner, the trustworthy friend, the honest parent. 2, recognize the consequence of the action. What are the worst possible consequences of saying yes to the temptation? How would I feel when this chapter of my life is told? Proud or ashamed? Who would be hurt? 3, rededicate yourself to God. Pray. Bring God fully into this moment. God is already listening, watching, loving you, and wants what is best for you. 4, reveal your struggle to a trusted friend. Be held accountable. This may mean giving your password to that friend and access to your electronics. If you cannot think of a trusted friend, it's time to look closely at your relationships and develop one. 5, remove yourself from the tempting situation. Toxic relationships, tempting situations, people who cause you to doubt yourself and question your own honor. Go another way, find a different job, change your number. This is not copping out. It can be restoring your life. Back to Mayberry. What do you imagine Opie did when the man who lost the wallet returned? Well, first, what do you imagine Sheriff Andy Taylor, Opie's dad, did when he met the man who had lost the wallet and learned his son had bought a rod and reel? When Andy goes home and finds Opie's piggy bank smashed and more money gone, Andy rushes to the store and brings Opie home. Sweet old Andy accuses Opie of keeping the money and going out to spend more on himself. Now, what do you imagine Opie did? When Andy stopped talking, Opie explained. He returned the rod and reel, got the money back, and then was going to use his own money to make up the difference so all $50 would be returned. You can see the emotions in Andy's face as he sees his own assumptions in a mirror. Then Andy looks at his son and says, "You're really something. You know that, Ope?" Sounds much like what I hope to hear someday when I meet Jesus face to face. "Well done, good and faithful servant." Don't we all? Small things, a moment of maybe, they will matter when the big things come. And the big things always come. Let's close by praying the Lord's Prayer one more time. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.